Hello, David Waltuck. Congratulations on a very successful restaurant, Chanterelle, and your 30-year anniversary, and this gorgeous book that's sitting on the arm of my chair. Since it's so heavy, I can't hold it in my lap. It will make me go numb. Hello, David.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, fine. It's so good to see. It's such a good place. I mean, it's hard business. How did you get involved? How did it all start, the story of Chanterelle, which is a legend in New York restaurants?
Well, the story, which is very well recounted in my new book, is basically of a kid who grew up in New York, and one of whose obsessions was restaurants and cooking and food. Long ago, before network and before the chef as sort of star, just something that I was obsessed with. And
how old were you when you went to that restaurant where it just sort of went on like a light bulb in your head?
Oh, God, we would go, my parents would take my brother, my younger brother, and myself to the theater, or to concerts and so on, very, very regularly, and it was always an excursion into Manhattan where we would have dinner at a restaurant, and most commonly though, would end up at a sort of a theater district, French bistro, and
weren't they awful?
Well, not in my memory, you know.
Oh, I see. I remember them so, really
but,
bad.
But the it was just such a different experience from my experience of food at home, which was. I'm not one of those chefs that speaks, you know, poetically about his grandmother's cooking or his mother's cooking, and that's how we learned to cook. That's not at all my story.
That's why I found it so amazing that you were drawn such a young age to cooking.
I think that, as like a lot of, especially young boys, I had sort of serial obsessions,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether it's Civil War history or scuba diving.
Dinosaurs.
You know, they come and go, but the cooking thing stuck.
Uh-huh. Well.
So you started out as a chef. At what age, David?
Well, I started out, I guess I could call myself a chef when we opened our restaurant, because most of my actual professional experience has been at my restaurant, and that was at the age of 24 when we opened first Chanterelle.
But you were cooking before.
I had finished college. I was majored in biological oceanography.
There you go. So of course you asked.
A minor in art history.
So you were predestined to say, "Would you like fries with that, sir?"
Yeah, something like that.
David, do you know how many of us in the food world have degrees in art history? You know, Ruth Reichel does too.
And yes, I do.
And we both went to the University of Michigan within 10 years of each other, getting a master's in art history. Isn't that weird?
And then you started saying, "Would you like fries with that, sir?"
Yeah. So I did, even though it became quite apparent to me at some point in my college career that this was not me, I did finish, and then I started cooking. I got a job in a little restaurant. I applied to Culinary Institute in upstate New York. I got in, and I went there for a while, and then I kind of got antsy and
dropped out. Well, you said you already knew so much more than you were being taught in class.
I don't know. I just felt that it was a worthwhile experience, but I really felt that I needed more, and it also felt like it was kind of repeating and kind of droning at a certain point, and I just wanted to move on.
Uh-huh.
And beyond that, on the personal side, I was seeing a person who is now my wife, who was in New York City, and I wanted to be in New York City where she was.
Uh-huh. And that's a romance in itself, isn't it?
It is. That's a big part of the story that's in the book.
Yes, and you mentioned poetic in passing. I was really amazed that you waxed poetic in your descriptions of your love of food and your relationship with Karen, your wife. I mean, you're absolutely a romantic.
I am.
And
there are many of us out there. We just, even in New York, it has to be hidden under a kind of a crusty exterior so that nobody can see how soft and mushy we are.
But the story goes on. You said you were cooking at lunchtime, and then you'd have the evening off, so you would go out and buy fancy ingredients and do what you were cooking at home. And friends said, "Well, you should have a restaurant of your own." So, 24 years.
Foolishly, we listened.
Foolishly, well, like 30 years later at a James Beard.
Well, we're still here. We're still having fun.
Well, you're a James Beard Award winner for New York City, which is going to be the toughest of the areas as well. So
he's won a lot of awards.
And many people said it was long overdue. And why doesn't Waltuck get the recognition he deserves? And we we talked to you briefly after that happened, and you were just as laid back then as you are now. It's just
I'm pretty humble.
There's some steel under this someplace. Now, how would you describe Chanterelle as a restaurant style?
Well, to answer that, I kind of have to go, you know, back in history to the dark ages of the late 70s when we opened.
That is incredible.
The world was very different, and I mentioned the whole Food Network and the whole frenzy of chefs as stars and all that. That just was really absent then, or it was, if anything, in a very sort of early nascent phase. So it felt fine to, it didn't feel like a crazy thing to do to open a restaurant. It felt more casual. Like, we'll open a restaurant and hopefully people will come, and it didn't cost $1 million to open a restaurant in those days. And what we wanted to do, I was very interested in what was going on in France at that time, which was essentially Nouvelle Cuisine, which is kind of a punchline or a joke at this point to a lot of people, but it really shouldn't be, because what Nouvelle Cuisine is basically the way everybody cooks now, except we just don't call it that. Mm-hmm. The idea that a chef could develop his own style, that seasonality was enormously important, that the best ingredients were enormously important, that you would not necessarily do classic dishes, but you would do your version of them, or you would come up with your own things. That's just the way it is now. But it was a little bit, it was revolutionary at that time, and so that's what really moved me, and that's what Chanterelle is about. Chanterelle is about my style of cooking, which is, if anything, it's an American cooking French food. So
that's a great explanation of it, or description of it.
An American who has never worked in a French restaurant in France, cooking French food. So, that also may tie in a little bit to your outing me as a romantic, because I have a very romantic notion about what a restaurant should be, what a great restaurant should be. And I wanted to make Chanterelle be, in a way, the American version of what a three-star dining experience in France at that time would be. And then the other very important aspect of our restaurant that, again, is somewhat taken for granted at this point, but then was very different, is just the style of the service.
Yeah, you can see that. It's amazing. You can see that in the pictures. In the book, I'm not really sure why I see that, but I did see that in looking at all the pictures. It's clear that this is there's something very special going on in front of house, because you do have a friend called Karen who sort of makes sure that happens.
Right, and it's really, a lot of it is her. We always wanted our experience of eating, and we did eat in a lot of great restaurants in France before and after we opened Chanterelle. In the pre-child days when we still could travel.
Yeah, you were hitting two-star places, too.
Was that the fancy French restaurant in New York had very little to do with the fancy French restaurant in France. There was no, I did not experience condescension or haughtiness or, any of that in Taillevant in Paris or uh-huh. any of those kind of places. But in New York, that was a very real quality of those places.
Yeah, that was de rigueur, places like Grenouille and Le Grenouille and places like that. I guess that's the
it was something that developed here, I think, for whatever reason. And I just wanted to eliminate that. I wanted real friendly, non-condescending, but very correct, very proper service. And we've always gone out of our way to get real people, smart people that can not only learn the way we do things here, but learn how to adapt to each table, each customer, each client, so that they give them the experience that, within the boundaries of what Chanterelle can do and wants to do, the experience that they as clients want.
Now, you mentioned in the book that you added, if you like, a third leg to the stool when you found your sommelier, whose name I must confess I have quickly forgotten, but you have a page dedicated to Roger, and you say he just completed what we were trying to do.
Absolutely, and he's been here, a long time, and hopefully will always be here, I think, probably.
And what's his name again, Roger?
His name is Roger Deghorn, and he's a master sommelier. He is someone who, as is related in the book, you know, when we were in our first sort of incarnation, which was in Soho on Grand Street, we were a tiny little restaurant. We're still a small restaurant, but we were a 30-seat restaurant, and we kind of did most everything ourselves, and, you know, put together the wine list as best we could, and, you know, there was no sommelier, is bottom line. But when we moved here, which is double in size, we realized that we couldn't do everything ourselves, and we certainly weren't experts on wine. So we had a series of sommeliers, on a couple of occasions when someone left and we were looking for a replacement, we asked around to, you know, who would know who was good, and a couple of times we asked Roger, just called him up and said, we're in this situation, who do you recommend? And a couple of times he said, I suggest this person or that person, and then finally we called him one day and he said, well, how about me?
Uh-huh.
And so we were very happy to say, it's you.
Yeah, no, that's a great story.
Really well.
Now let's go to this wonderful book, because we've talked about the restaurant, which is a subject in and of itself. But I have a question, because I look through it and all the pictures are so beautiful and the techniques look a little daunting to me. Now I fiddle in the kitchen a little bit, mm-hmm. not nearly as successfully as Anne does. But you indicate that this really is a cookbook that home chefs can use.
I absolutely think so. If you really look at it, I'd say that there's nothing in there. There are recipes where there are many parts to things, but none of the individual parts, I think, should be daunting to a good home cook. My cooking is not super complicated.
You have none of these immersion heated circulators or whatever.
Well, that's after my time. It's not my thing. And I have honestly. Certainly have nothing against that whole movement.
No, I don't either.
It's just not my style.
Yeah, I mean, I just can't imagine how we could cook from the Alinea cookbook. I mean, how would you get the equipment?
Now, organizationally, you start at the beginning of the meal and you go through to the end, right? In the book itself.
Yes. Yeah. It's a normal sort of standard setup where there are hors d'oeuvres and there are soups and there are appetizers and main courses and so on.
This is my question. I've been hoarding up till I have a chance to dump this in. Are these real recipes that have been up till now secret from Chanterelle?
I don't believe in secret recipes. I
mean, okay.
But the truth, the answer to that is that I don't use recipes. So I had to make these recipes. I had to, you know, get in the kitchen with measuring spoons and scales and so on and
so forth.
Yeah,
this is not unusual.
Something that I normally make in quantity without ever measuring, make it for four people and see what it really is that goes into them.
Yep.
And in some cases sort of modified it, because when you're cooking for four people, sometimes you don't need to do some of the things that you need to do when you're making a sauce for 50 people.
But
sometimes in a way it's more organic cook for four people, because it's not a sauce that's been down over a long period of time that needs to hold and then get ladled onto a plate. It's a sauce that grows out of sautéing a piece of fish or a piece of meat, and then the whole process is streamlined in a funny way.
But do you give tips and secrets in the book?
Again, I don't believe in secrets. But yes, lots of tips.
Lots of tips.
Yeah, you do give tips. Can you take a favorite dish and just sort of go through it for us and take us through the thought process and the construction process?
Well, sure.
Pick any one you like.
Well, the sort of obvious one is the grilled seafood sausage, which is
the only thing on
our menu that never goes away. That's always there. We're kind of unique. We change our menu completely every 4 weeks. That means completely except for that one appetizer, which is the grilled seafood sausage. And by the by, in addition to changing the menu, that is the food that we're serving every 4 weeks, we change the cover of the menu.
Oh, yeah, tell us about that,
too. About every 6 months, and that's, um, that, those menus are all done by different artists.
Well, first so we run through the sausage, and then
sure.
I wanted to ask you about that art program, because you're having an exhibition come up. Tell us first about the sausage.
Yes.
Now, you did this early on, didn't you?
It's one of the things that I sort of came up with when I was still playing around at home, before the restaurant opened, and it just seemed to stick, and it's just become our signature. I guess you have to have a signature dish, and so this is our signature dish. But it is, it seems complicated, but it's also very direct and simple, and I think that's what my food is. There's not a lot of unnecessary frills to it. And the seafood sausage was inspired by my reading of a description of a seafood sausage. It probably wasn't even a description. It was just a mention that some food writer had a boudin or fruit de mer or something like that along those lines at a restaurant called Taillevent in Paris. And I said, that sounds like a really interesting idea. So I set out to come up with a grilled seafood sausage. And what it is shrimp and scallops and lobster that are diced along with toasted pine nuts and then melted, bound together with a fish mousse. Like usually I use striped bass, but it could be any white fish. And seasoned, fairly delicately, but some brandy and some port, cayenne, and that's stuffed into a regular sausage casing and tied off and poached, and then at service time it's brushed with butter and grilled and browned and served with a kind of assertive beurre blanc sauce. So, but the funny thing is that years later, after I had been serving the seafood sausage at Chanterelle for some time, I had the opportunity to go to Taillevent in Paris, and they had this seafood sausage on their menu, and I ordered it, and it was completely different, different approach than mine. And it's funny because I actually think it sort of epitomizes difference between sort of classic French cooking and the French cooking that I do. Because theirs was not browned, it was not grilled, it was poached, and it was in sort of large slices, and very delicate. It was served, it had pistachios, and the seafood in it was more very finely cut, so that it was much more like a white pudding, like a boudin. Uh-huh. And the beurre blanc was much more delicate. The shallots were strained out. I leave the shallots in. So it was kind of like, I think, the very delicate and sort of perfectionist classic French cooking versus the kind of somewhat more brash and more full-flavored and more, hey, maybe we can brown this and get another layer of texture in it. American approach to sort of the same thing.
That's a very good metaphor for what your cooking is. I mean, how it is, or you know what I'm saying. That explains a whole lot about your style, I think.
Thank you.
Now, you mentioned, and we mentioned this, your art program.
Yes.
And, I mean, as I read it, you thought that art on the walls would distract diners from the plates and the food in front of them.
Well, beyond that, we were in Soho, which is a loft, cast iron, old loft district, which throughout the 70s was kind of emptied as manufacturing and the warehouses kind of moved away. And so that area became sort of colonized by artists, because these were these big lofts with lots of light, and they could work in them. And so it was at that time, very much of an artist's district area. There were starting to be some really great galleries there. And so we felt a connection to that, and we wanted to be part of that in our own way. But we felt it was sort of politically wrong to say, okay, we're going to put your picture up on the wall, but not your picture up on the wall. And we wanted the dining room to be rather simple. And Chanterelle is almost like an old-fashioned idea of what a restaurant is. There's no waterfalls, and there's no,
Lordy.
whatever there is, and, there's no giant Buddhas or any of that kind of thing. It's a room. It's a very pretty room with tables and chairs and china and silverware, and there are flowers, and that's it. And it's intended to, as much as possible, minimize the feeling of business being done. There's no obvious cash register. There's no bar. that you can see. When you get a bill, it's handwritten, just like the menu is handwritten. So anyway, we wanted to keep it simple, and we wanted art to be part of it, but we didn't want to say to choose one person's art over another person's art. So our person that our good friend who was also the designer of the restaurant suggested that we do the menu covers and have them change pretty often, and that's what we've done ever since the very beginning. Sometimes the artists are our clients who are friends. Sometimes they're just people that we sort of say, hey, would you like to do a menu?
Well, you've had some really big established artists as well in there, and it's all going to be in an exhibition.
We're hoping that there's going to be that the menu collection will be acquired by the New York Public Library, and that they're planning a show of them, and which will in some way coincide with our 30th anniversary, which is actually next year.
Oh, it's 2009. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, David, we could talk to you absolutely all day. We'll simply say this: we'll continue the conversation next time we come to New York City, and you can
show us
a few more things, and we'll record our real life experience.
And meanwhile, everybody should get this book because it's just one of those books that I can't explain it. It's an era, but it's still contemporary. Do you understand what I mean?
Thank you.
Yeah, and it's.
And of course you can get it through OTM Bookshelf. You can undoubtedly probably get one if you stop by the restaurant. It's called Chanterelle, Chanterelle. The website is Chanterelle, NYC, I think, David?
That's right, NYC.
.com. I'd just like to say thank you so much for being a part of our program.
Thank you. Pleasure.
As we say goodbye, if you can hang on the line, because we have a question I want to ask you off air.
Great.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, David. We just love the conversation and look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, we've interviewed David Waltuck before about his restaurant, Chanterelle. His other half, who partnered with him in founding and maintaining and growing this business, is Karen Waltuck, and we're talking to her now. And we'll also be talking to the food and beverage director, sommelier, Roger, in between. Karen, you always talk to the chef. You always talk to the back of the house people. We don't talk that much to the front of the house, and this is like more than half of the equation.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we love this collaboration, and it seemed to work very well for us through the years.
What do you see as your mission running the front of the house?
I think it's to present David's food in the best light and really to pamper our guests as they come in through the door. And as Roger and I always say, we have 17 tables, and for us it's 17 separate worlds. So what we try to do is to work at giving each table what, you know, their magic time that suits each person, each group individually.
Wait, I mean, you seem so nice. You're almost too nice to believe. You just have a generally happy, caring personality.
Well, I mean, I think that the nice part of the collaboration has been that we do what we enjoy. I think that if I were cooking, people wouldn't be here very long. And if David were in the dining room, I don't think that anybody would be enjoying it either. He really is quite quiet. So it just works out.
No, you're hitting your 30th anniversary.
Yes, we are.
Of success. I mean, we're not talking about just sort of hanging in there. This is one of the most successful restaurants in Manhattan, well, New York City. From when you started to now, you must have seen a huge difference in the clientele, environment in the restaurant world.
You know, I think in many ways our clientele has stayed very similar, very mixed. I think that's part of why we really love our town. There's a real diversity to it. And we've never, even though we're a quite formal restaurant, we've never had a dress code. So I think we've always been a comfortable place for a variety of different types of people and professions. And so, you know, we really enjoy that part of the restaurant. And I think in some ways that hasn't changed that much. You know, we still get people from overseas. We still get people that are from the neighborhood. We still get artists. We still get business people, people for weddings or business deals or birthdays. So, you know, in that sense, I think, again, we just really love being in our town.
Tell me about this art.
I should also mention, too, that
Roger,
we do have clientele that come in business attire, but there's some people that come in tuxedos, and this is pretty much of an artist community around here, and they come in blue jeans and torn t-shirts, and
you don't mind.
Well, they're our clientele.
That's a great attitude. Now tell me about all this artwork that I see on the walls here.
Well, we began the restaurant in Soho, which was then where artists were living, although now it's become very gentrified. And so the artists, we were in their community, and the person that designed our space, a very old friend, was part of that community, Bill Katz. And it was his suggestion that we perhaps, instead of deciding politically who should be on the wall and who was excluded, that we would have the artwork really in your hands. And so we changed the menu cover every 6 months, actually twice a year. And even though David changes the menu once every 4 weeks, but we change the outside of the menu twice a year. And so we've been very, very honored through the years to have some incredible artists.
I'm looking. I see Keith Haring.
Yeah.
I see Robert Indiana.
Yeah, Robert Mapplethorpe, Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby.
He did a collaboration with Edward Henderson as the artist, and he did a little story for us.
Oh, how interesting.
Roy Lichtenstein. And we really, really are honored to have all these artists a part of our lives.
Well, I mean, it sort of ties some ends together in how this is a whole experience, this restaurant. What do you think is the biggest problem facing front-of-the-house restaurants, people in the front of the house or that part of the restaurant operation today?
Well, the only thing that I absolutely hate is when people wait. I mean, you know, you try to book things so that it's extremely generous, but somehow people are either late on occasion or they really are having such a lovely time they don't want to leave, and along comes someone that's booked and they've done everything right and they've confirmed and they've come looking fabulous, and then they, you know, they wait and it's, you know, they don't feel as happy, and that's the only thing that truly drives me out of my mind. But besides that, I think, you know, there isn't really too much that we don't know about.
It's so interesting you would say that, because when you do a Zagat survey, one of the questions they ask is, what is it you like least about dining out? And I always put in wait.
Oh, well, there you are. So we feel the same way.
So you're absolutely on track.
What about staff training? How comprehensive is that? How intense is that?
Well, at Chanterelle, it's not a question of intensity. It's everybody here seems to enjoy what they're doing and love what they're doing. So we're constantly discussing whether it's wine, whether it's food, whether it's service, or whether it's our clientele. When we have our staff meetings, we talk about each reservation as individuals and what we can do for them and what their little intricacies are, what they enjoy, and how we can improve on that, and what their favorite tables are, and what they enjoy eating, and if they have any allergies. So all of these are discussed in depth before the service begins.
So it's an ongoing affair, is what Roger's saying.
Yes.
You know, so we always engage a certain level of proficiency. So that's a given. I mean, a skill is a given. It's like going into a kitchen and knowing how to use a knife or make certain sauces before you even would engage a cook. So coming in with that skill and then learning what, you know, where things are and how we do things is really more a question of finesse than skill per se.
Roger, you were saying that you actually talk about each reservation, so you, to the extent that you know who the people are who are coming because they've been before or if they've told you something,
we have quite a few regulars that come back constantly over the years. And yes, this Chanterelle is more of a destination restaurant more than anything else, and so many times people come from long ways, and sometimes people hear about us whether they're from New York or from overseas or on vacation or it's business. So what we try to get as all the details as we can beforehand, and treat each table individually or each individual individually, and try to cater to their.
Roger,
oh, you would like to know.
Roger, tell us your last name, and is it French?
It's my last name is Dagorn.
But is that French?
It's Breton. So it's
Breton. Oh, yes.
So it's I come from a part of France that's Irish at heart.
It's Celtic at heart. Or it's the French equivalent of Celtic. So it's like Cornwall and Wales and Scotland.
Exactly. There is a Cornwall in Brittany.
They would like to think they're not a part of France.
Fiercely independent. Let's put it that way.
Or headstrong.
We are part of Brittany.
You are. Roger, have you spent your whole life in this beverage?
Pretty much, yes.
And have you noticed changes then?
Oh, yes.
Could you tell us some of those?
Well, certainly the clientele has changed. They've become much more aware about food, about wine, about dining. There has been a change in perception of restaurants overall. We have adapted in ways, but in other situations, we have maintained our style here for 30 years.
And I think in many ways we were trailblazing. When we were the first restaurant to have, a French restaurant to have the menu in English. Besides, I think the Four Seasons, which had hired one woman before us, we were the first restaurant that had any women on the floor. We were the first, maybe the first restaurant to have like a really great cheese board, and the kind of service now that you've become relatively, you know, accustomed to, which is formal without being pretentious, you know, or obsequious.
Where did you get all those ideas?
I think we were just young, and that was just what we were. So we just made a restaurant with what we were. And so, you know, we didn't have a dress code. They weren't, you know, didn't have white gloves, and we were in an area that was relaxed and was about you know, an artist area that was kind of off the beaten track. And so I think that that's what we were. But now a lot of restaurants are like that. I think that's part of what's happened over the years, you know. So
would you ever think about changing or like opening another one? Or
sometimes
everyone seems to have five restaurants.
Yeah,
anymore.
No, David's not really particularly in love with administrating. I think his pleasure is really cooking, and he still does that. And I don't think we're big entrepreneurs. So in the essence, I think we stay a mom-and-pop restaurant, although we've always hoped, from the very beginning, we'd hoped to have a sommelier that for us would really be a balance and for us in the dining room. And, you know, and it's been almost 15 years now that we've collaborated, and we feel very lucky to be working with Roger.
You know? Oh, well, yeah, it seems like a perfect match.
Well, there's an interesting story which we got David's version of when he talked to us a few months ago about the fact that you, Karen, or David kept on calling Roger because you knew him and saying,
yeah,
can you recommend someone to come and be the sommelier?
Right.
He recommended several people. And then finally, he called you one day and he said, it's time.
Yeah, well, actually, we called him to recommend someone else because we'd always had fantastic luck with his recommendations. And he said, well, how about me? And I thought he was joking. And, you know, he's like, no, I'd like to come and talk to you. And I was like, oh, my God, this is just perfection. And so that was the end of that.
How long ago was that, Roger?
Well, that was 15 years ago, and I'm the one that consider myself lucky.
so you're sort of like a third leg of a marriage. Almost.
Yes. I think it's a third leg of a three-legged stool. I think that's more like it than okay. Thing.
and before that, it was a two and a bit legged stool.
There you are.
Well, no, you need to rush off. I know you have another engagement. That's fine. Karen, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. It's wonderful to get your perspective on this after talking to David for so long.
Well, thank you. I'm really honored to be part of your show, and thank you very much for inviting us.
Well, our pleasure.
So we're going to say goodnight to Karen, and we hope you have a wonderful evening.
Well, thank you, and the same with you. We'll look forward to spoiling you.
Oh, that's great.
If you can pass the word back. I'd like Roger to just spend a couple of minutes talking about the wine program because I think it's pretty special.
Oh, well, thank you. I think it's special too. I work on the wine list based on David's cuisine. The menu changes every month, so I choose the wines that are best suited his style. It isn't just French. It isn't just American. It's international. David's cuisine has touches that span the globe, basically, and in many of the ingredients that he uses. And so I try to emulate that with the wine list.
Now, how do you go about that? Do you actually taste a new item that he's going to put on the menu, or do you just know the ingredients, or do you sit down
Both.
With him and taste wine with his food as well?
Definitely, that all of the above.
All of the above.
All of the above. Anytime there's something new, I will taste the food, and I will catalog the ingredients and the taste sensations and the flavors, and I will seek out wines that will marry with that with those combinations.
What drove you to this as a profession?
Well, it was simple. I grew up in the restaurant business. My family owned a restaurant here in New York for 15 years. Ooh, longer than that.
What was that?
Le Pont Neuf. I was on. It was on the east side, Midtown, and my great uncle was a chef restaurateur in the 50s, La Morique, which was on 52nd Street and 2nd Avenue.
Oh, so it's in your blood.
Oh, yes. As a child, I slept many a night in the coat room there. so, yes, I grew up with French cuisine and with French wine. So
I think, a particular talent to be able to taste wines, to know wines, and remember wines as well as you do. I mean, this is innate.
Well, for me, it's just a matter of course. It's what I do.
Yeah, I mean, if he was an online radio personality, then we would be able to compare notes. Otherwise, we can just admire and enjoy the skill that he brings to the job.
Well, it's also a love of dealing with people, and I spent 5 years in my father's kitchen cooking, and I loved that too. But the problem with being a chef or a cook in New York, not good enough to be a good cook or a good chef, you have to be great.
Yeah. Right.
There's a lot of talent here in New York.
Yeah, but that has to help you with selecting wines if you already know about food.
Oh yeah, yeah. But what it is, it's a little, for me, it's a little lonely back in the kitchen. So I gravitated to the dining room, and so I had the contact with the public, and I thrive on that.
Well, we're going to be interested to see what you and David have conjured up together for us this evening. Since you've already talked about us, I'm guessing that you must have some clues as to what is going
sure.
on. And this, I'm sure that's been done before. This is the first time anybody actually told us that's what they did. So we're looking forward to a very enjoyable time. And Roger, thank you so much for taking the time
to talk.
It's
my pleasure.
Yeah, what a nice family in your restaurant. Thank you.
It is a family.